now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults on the cheese in between. The movies are brief, the entertainment is grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, and it is time to round out 2025, and we're going to do it with Iced from 1989, and I'll get to it right after this.
What do you say, Corey? One last race, just you and me.
What do you say? You back off already, Jeff?
No, you back off. She's with me.
Hey, when was the last time
we went skiing?
Not since that weekend with Jeff Stinson.
I thought the guy had a few loose screws, but I didn't think he was suicidal, though.
Pardon me for saying this, but you all look prepared for a funeral or worse. Relax.
Marshmallow!
Jeanette, what do you think you're doing out there? Would you two just please both be my friends for 5 minutes and help me with this?
Iced was released February 7th, 1989, with an 87-minute running time. Your director here is Kevin Kitney, and your screenplay by Joseph Allen Johnson, who's also in the movie, which, you know, works out well when you have your writer can be in the movie, too. Your producer here is Robert Siebert. Now, there's no one in this movie you know, probably outside of Deborah DeLisio. She was from Slumber Party Massacre. If you remember that movie, which, you know, was made prior to this. And one of the funny parts is she actually talks about it. We'll get into it at that point. We'll talk about that too. But, now this movie, I had never seen this. And there was a good reason for that, because this was put out originally on VHS, and Betamax. So, you know, by Prism Entertainment and CBS Fox Video in February of 89. Okay, so I never saw it. I never had it. I never rented it. We never saw it ever. And then it never was available until Vinegar Syndrome put it out on Blu-ray through their sub-label Degasser Video. And back in January, about, you know, almost a year ago now, January of 2025. So, you know, it's a movie that I don't think any of you have seen. Just be very honest with you. I mean, I'm looking here, you know, your distribution company was Prism Entertainment. Micon Releasing Corporation, you know, there's no, you know, it looks like it's shot in $1.87. It's just what it is. It's kind of funny, because you look at this, this movie looks, I mean, it's definitely the 80s. I mean, it's 89, probably, if you gather in some of it, but like, they all look like they could be from any time during the late 80s into the mid 80s. It definitely doesn't have that 70s, like the early 80s, that, like, late, you know, the Death of Disco look that some of these movies had. This one definitely does not seem like it was shot. It seems like it was like, you know, one shot and get away. Now, the one thing I can say is this, and I'm not trying to like be mean about this, but it's true. The movie was shot, a lot of it was shot at what, Big Cottonwood Canyon in Utah. And they take full advantage of the fact that they are in the snow and that it looks beautiful. Like, the outside stuff looks great. The you know, all the scenery, everything like that. I mean, it's all real, so it looks great. One of the thing is, you know, it would be very hard to fake any of that. Now, that this was filmed in Utah was actually a little surprising to me. I figured this was going to be in Canada, you know, one of the tax shelter kind of movies. But it's kind of late in the game for that. 89 is kind of late in that game. So it means it was shot in 88, kind of thing. I know a lot of the early movies were made in the early slashers, I should say. Took, you know, they filmed them in Canada because there was the tax shelter and everything else. It was just cheaper to make. And, you know, why? Why not? It makes perfect sense. So, you know, the only other name you might know here is Lisa Loring. Lisa Loring was a child actress. She actually, well, I mean, you would be very hard to tell this, but that's Wednesday Addams. That's who that is, from the original Addams Family from 64 to 66. But you would have to know that's her because there's no way you would look at her and be like, oh, yeah, she looks just like it, because she was a little kid during those. Anyway, let's get started on this story because, oh boy. Here we go. So, story opens with Jeff and now it's going to be Corey are fighting over Trina. And what happens is they have a race and I don't know, they're fighting over this girl. She doesn't really want Jeff. You know, Corey's kind of like a jerk and they have a race. And at one point Corey knocks Jeff over and Jeff gets mad and they, whatever. So they go back to the hotel. So now Jeff storms into the room where Corey and Trina are now making out they were arm wrestling on the bed, which is weird. And then everyone's been drinking and stuff. But we see Jeff lay out like all his issues to some unseen person. And that, you know, to us, we'll get there in a minute, but like, so he lays all this out. And then he gets so mad that he storms off and grabs a pair of skis and then jumps off of this thing and lands on a bunch of rocks and appears to be dead. So that's where we start. Now, 4 years later is where the story kind of picks up. And that's what happens. So 4 years later, after their friend Jeff has died in a nightmare skiing accident after being jilted by his lover and a group of childhood friends, couples Trina and Corey, physician John and Diane, and Eddie and Jeanette and Carl converge on a snow peak, a newly renovated posh ski resort where they are mysteriously invited for an exclusive New Year's Eve event by real estate developer Alex Bourne. Okay, so we are now where we're going to be shooting this again. Obviously, everything was shot all in the same place, but they tried to make it look different. But now, like I said, the exteriors look beautiful. I mean, there's snow everywhere. You can clearly tell this is all shot for real. Real snow, everything like that. You know, there's no sound stages. There's no pretending to be cold. Everyone's actually cold. Eddie, who's traveling alone to the resort, is killed before arriving by an assailant with a snowplow while parked alongside the road. Diane and John are also traveling nearby toward the resort. Meanwhile, Jeanette awaits Eddie's arrival while Trina expresses guilt over Jeff's death, as their friends believe he committed suicide upon finding that Corey and Trina were having sex. Now, I don't know how we would have seen that, because he was already like stormed out and whatever, and then they're like, and it's a full-on sex scene, you know, kind of thing. A lot of naked bodies. You know, it's very, you know, it's not a full-on porno sex scene, folks. Calm it down. I know this is a family-friendly show, but I'm saying. But yeah, there's a bunch of nudity. Both of them are definitely naked, and they're definitely rolling around together, and they're definitely doing other things, you know, sitting up and doing whatever. Anyway, it's not that kind of show. But, the end of the May. Carl is troubled by nightmares about Jeff while Jeanette, in Eddie's absence, deduces... Okay, so we have a whole bunch of stuff happening here. So Alex is the real estate developer. He shows up and after, well, let's see. So you have, Carl, who's a drug addict, got a gun, He cuts himself cutting up his coke, but there's definitely like the killers kind of stalking them. It's this is a slasher movie where it's kind of more cat and mouse at things, because he's coming for it. So the most of the killings don't occur until about an hour in, and we're not there yet. But be it as it may, the whole idea is that Carl is troubled by nightmares about Jeff while Jeanette's waiting for so when Alex shows up, Jeanette starts seducing Alex while he's visiting the group to try to welcome the resort. As the group's socializing, Jeanette, receives a mysterious phone call from someone impersonating Eddie, who tells her that he's here with Jeff now. Alex recognizes Jeff's name, claiming that Jeff was a guest on the list and that Jeff accepted his invitation to the resort. The group suspects Jeff's invitation was included as Alex acquired the names from a mailing list from the resort they visited 4 years ago, where Jeff died. Everyone starts getting real tense here. Alex leaves, and the friends argue over the circumstances of Jeff's death. John reveals that he found a newspaper clipping in his room about Jeff's death. All right, this is also when we find out Carl's got. We know Carl's a gun. They all find out Carl's a gun, and Carl's kind of a not a really. He's kind of a like an absolute POS anyway, but we definitely find that out. So anyway, John's summoned back to the hospital because there's an emergency C-section on a patient. So John and Diane attempt to leave, but the killer, donning a ski suit, impales John through the throat with a ski pole before stabbing Diane to death with a large icicle. Those are two. The both kills are very good. This is when this is about an hour, and this is when the movie starts picking up, and people just start getting picked off, which is great. Which is again, we're not watching this for the acting. We're watching this for the kills. This is what we're watching this for. It's a slasher movie. It's a late cycle slash movie, but it's still a slash movie nonetheless, and this is what we're watching for. Jeanette goes to relax in the hot tub after Carl basically tries to rape her. Just cringy. But she gets naked, and now she's going to be naked getting in the hot tub. So she's getting the hot tub outside, because this is like, I guess, what you do. I don't know. I've never been out in Utah, and I've never gotten naked in a hot tub out in the snow in Utah. So I guess that's what you did back in the day. In 1989, I was 11. So, shockingly, I wasn't doing those kind of things. Where am I here? So, the killer sees that she's relaxing in the hot tub, grabs an electric heater, and tosses it in the water, and she is electrified. It was just very much just a lot of naked shaking. Lots of naked shaking in there. The electrical short causes a power outage in the chalet, which awakens Carl. Outside, Carl sees the killer waving a kerosene lantern. Carl decides to go investigate because why not? And he gets caught in two different bear traps, accidentally firing his revolver in the process. The gunfire awakes Corey, who is... So Carl's killed. We don't see... Carl gets all slashed up. We don't see that part of it, but he's definitely caught in two bear traps, and he gets killed. Corey wakes up, and then he is stabbed in the chest in the kitchen by the killer. So at dawn, Trina wakes up and finds an injured Corey still clinging to life, as well as the corpse of Jeanette, Diane, John, and Carl. She takes Carl's revolver before phoning Alex for help. Trina is pursued upstairs by a killer before unmasking him, revealing him to be actually Alex. Alex reveals that he was the friend Jeff was talking to in the beginning of the movie and found his body that night and was seriously injured himself in the process of rushing to Jeff's aid, resulting in his leg being amputated, dashing any and all hopes he ever had as a professional skier. This movie sounds a little like, I mean, it's not super hard to follow, but it's like, okay. Like, this guy's got a prosthetic leg, and you would never know because he's walking, and he doesn't appear to have a prosthetic leg. So I'm not saying that you couldn't walk normally with a prosthetic leg, but it doesn't seem like he's got one when he shows up. But be as it may. Anyway, just before Alex is about to kill Trina, Corey manages to climb upstairs, and so she stabs him in the leg with the scissors. He gets on top of her. He's going to kill her. She kicks him off. And as he's going backwards towards the window, Corey shoots him. He's kind of going to go through the window. His leg gets wrapped up in the cord of a lamp. And so now he's hanging off the side of the chalet. And of course, it's a prosthetic leg, so it pops off. And he falls to his safety of the grounds. But he's been shot, but he's clearly not dead as he hits the snow. So then it says 5 years later, okay? So now Corey and Trina, now with two kids, right, who now have two kids. So neither one of them appear to be five. So unless they had kids previously, I don't know where these kids came from, but these are their kids now. So it seems like it might have been more than 5 years, but they look exactly the same. The kids look older than five. But, okay, I'm buying everything at this point. I'm not worried about kids' ages. Anywho. They're at a snowy cabin. They're building a snowman. Trina goes to put the button eye on there, and all of a sudden, blood starts pouring out of the eye socket. And what happens? But Alex bursts out of the snowman, just explodes out of the snowman, and then freeze frame. And that's how the movie ends. So, I'm not 100% sure if that was what it's supposed to be, but that's what we got. Now, one of the things that Deborah DeLicio said, she doesn't think that the writer, Joe Johnson, envisioned when he wrote it that the script had a lot more suspense and humor, which didn't come through at all. I think he thought it was going to have more suspense to it and more humor to it, but none of that came through. She had said that when she compared it to her previous work on, like, Slumber Party Massacre, that was played intentionally for laughs, because, like, there are scenes which are funny, but then the difference between Ice and that is that the laughs are played intentionally. I think some of the issue here, and again, I'm not, and if you enjoy this movie, great. I actually enjoyed it. It's not that I didn't enjoy the movie. It just was kind of, I mean, there's a lot of sex scenes in the movie, but except for the one in the beginning, I think all the other ones are just, like, in people's heads. Like, there's no way these people are having sex in this. Oh, first of all, they're having sex in this bathtub, this carved out marble bathtub. Man, that people's heads are just, and necks are just against the marble. Like, it just looks painful to me. Just as somebody who just would not want to, like, have their neck jammed against, whether you're in the act or not, your neck cranked against the marble of a tub. Just seems, not like it's the most pleasant experience there. But yeah, they definitely make sure they put in, there's a whole lot of nudity in this. You don't see any male frontal nudity. You see a lot of women's tops. You can kind of see side shots of down there on women. But ultimately, they definitely were like, we need to get as much nudity as we can in here. And some, I think there's three or four sex scenes in the movie. Which is crazy, because I don't think people are actually having sex in those scenes. Like, I mean, not that they're actually having sex in those scenes, but I don't think those actually needed to be there per se. I mean, the one, yeah, but even then, like, how was he supposed to see them through the lodge? Like, he's on top of the mountain, gonna race to his death, and he's somehow seeing inside the room to see them, having sex. Like, I don't know how that will work out. I think when we start digging too deep into some of these movies, you start seeing, that you pull on a few threads here and the whole thing can come unraveled. And I don't really want to be the guy who's taking the steam out of Iced and unraveling it. Because, again, for a movie that was lost for a long time, I'm glad that it's now available. It's not exactly a movie I would probably want to watch again. But, certain slasher movies I love and I've watched multiple times. Like The Burning comes to mind, or My Bloody Valentine, the original, or like The Prowler. But this is one of the ones that I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I saw this. It's part of the lexicon of 1980s slasher movies. We know that slashers in general were the kind of unspoken, they were kind of the hidden away part of your horror kind of stuff. As much as people in the 80s and stuff, we loved horror kind of thing. I was young, but still, there was people who loved horror, but like slashers were always looked at like the dirty secret that they want to keep them quiet. But as we know, the franchise slasher, for Nightmare on Elm Street and then Friday the 13th, and then to a lesser extent, the Halloweens, but mainly Jason and Freddy, those guys, those movies made tons of money constantly. And as much as Paramount would love to have, forgotten that Jason was there, he made them so much money. New Line is called the house that Freddy built, for crying out loud. It's one of those things that, you look at these slasher movies and they were kind of being trying to make them quick. There's a documentary that's been out for a number of years now, and there's a book too. It's called Going to Pieces, and it touches on some of them. Ice is not part of that. There's also the new one that this summer that we had on The Vault. You can go back and hear the director Michael Gingold on with us. And we talked about Slasher Trash, the new one that's coming out from Creator VC and the Slasher Trash, whole community. It's something that, as and there are people who do not like slasher movies, who just love horror movies, but they like other stuff, and that's fine. I'm not saying anything against it. I like slasher movies. I always have liked slasher movies. Sometimes for their absolute, you know, insanity that they bring, and other times, you know, just because they're just, you know, to me, just fun, good times, and you don't have to read deeper into them. You just kind of enjoy what they are. They can be the, you know, the candy version of like what horror is. Not all horror needs to change your life. It can be fun. Anyway, have you ever seen Iced? I'm betting most people have not. I'm going to bet most of you have not seen Iced from 89. If you did, I'd love to hear that. How did you see it? Did you get your hands on a copy of VHS? Were there a mom and pop store that had it? I cannot imagine. By 89, you know, Blockbuster and was it Hollywood Video and those things, like they had to be, and Blockbuster I know existed, but like those other ones started kind of like coming into their own. And I know it was more into the 90s and stuff, but still, you know, this is definitely, I mean, we're talking almost a decade plus after Halloween. We're talking after all the Nightmare on Elm Street and the Friday the 13th. We're talking at the tail end when horror kind of got like low again. Like it was the low before horror started going back up again in the mid 90s, you know, with Scream and things like that. But you know, hey, like I said, I wanted to give you something at the end of the year. I always like to give you your New Year's Eve, a little, you know, craziness kind of thing. And I think Iced is one of those things that's just kind of zany and out there and different for a slasher movie. And hopefully, you know, if you take your time to go check it out, you might enjoy it. Now, it is, again, it's available on Blu-ray. You know, that's usually running like $25 kind of thing, but some of you don't want to spend that, I understand. It's on Shudder, at least it was on Shudder. And that's one of the things that if it's still available on Shudder, you can check it out. If you have Shudder, check it out for it's included. If not, I'm sure some of us don't want to plunk down that money, but I'm sure there's ways you can see bits and pieces at least and see some of the stuff from it. But anyway, folks, you know, like I've been saying to you guys, we are now at the, you know, as the year, as 2025, as we are, you know, a quarter of this century down is in the books and we're winding down this year, you know. I just hope that everybody can look forward to, you know, a happy and healthy 2026, you know, kind of thing. Look forward to hopefully a year that is better for everyone. I mean, if you had a great 2025, I hope you have an even better 2026. If 2025 just kicked you in the teeth and the ribs every single day and never let up, I'm hoping that changes for you in 2026. I want everyone to have an amazing new year. I want everyone to find peace in what they do, find joy in what you find joy in. You know, as you all know, you know, there's been a lot of change that's occurred here at Boss Bugs and Babes, you know, and not necessarily in a good way. But the thing is that, you know, I've been trying to make sure that I find some peace, you know, in, you know, when I can escape what's going on in the outside world. And I'm hoping that you guys have enjoyed this year of, you know, movies, and, you know, enjoyed the idea that, you know, I'm touching on different things and stuff and, you know, trying to bring you stuff that I, you know, I find interesting, you find interesting, and hopefully, you know, we can all keep going right through in 2026. Just looking ahead, 2026 will mark, we will hit episode 200 in a few episodes. We will also hit our 10-year anniversary. If you told me 10 years ago that I'd be doing this, you know, still going strong. I mean, I enjoy this. It's not that I don't say enjoy it. But originally the plan was to maybe put out, you know, at most 13 episodes a year. There are some years when I'm putting out, you know, far more than that. There are years when I only put out 13. But obviously to hit 200 episodes prior to a 10-year anniversary tells you that there had to be years when I was, and you know, myself and dad, you know, he was you know, producing these with me, and like when I would have guests on like Luke and Jonathan Inbody and, you know, guys like that, you know, we were trying to give you guys stuff that you enjoy. So sorry to ramble so much. Sorry to always be so philosophical at the end. This is what happens at the end of the year. Please make sure you take care of yourself. Please have a safe and happy new year. Please, you know, keep in mind that this is a hard time for a lot of people. And if you can help people, you know, kind of, you know, tell them they matter. Tell them that, you know, they're not invisible. They're important. And they're somebody, you know, who, whatever it might be, I would hate to think that, you know, that anyone might feel that way and have me not say to them, because I try to tell people all the time how, you know, they are, you know, they do matter. They are important. You know, they, you know, and even though you might not feel like that all the time, and I certainly am somebody who does not feel like he matters or is important, you know, a lot of times, you got to know, you got to find your peace and find what, helps you get through the times that are tough. And I'm hoping that Boss Bugs and Baze might help bring a smile to your face on the 13th and 31st and the special occasions, so that you can feel that, there are people who, are kind of into the same stuff you're into, and being kind of, horror nerds and sci-fi nerds and stuff, whatever. And we are, we're part of a whole community that does exist, and we do, need everybody as part of it. So anyway, folks, like I say around here, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!